On the show today, violence and diplomacy both continue in the Middle East.
We are in touch with our Israeli counterparts. We're in touch with the United Nations to help secure the necessary supplies of food, water, and medicine to the citizens of Gaza, those Palestinians who have nothing to do with the barbaric terrorists who carried out this attack.
Plus, the latest from the House of Representatives.
Unable to pass any legislation sending aid to Israel or Ukraine until lawmakers hold a full floor vote next week.
And later, news from Afghanistan after another deadly earthquake and election results in Poland. Today is Monday, October 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. A close-up look at Israel's Iron Dome defense system in a few minutes, but we begin today with the latest on the fighting and the diplomacy in the Middle East. The United States has renewed calls to ensure that innocent civilians fleeing the Israel-Hamas war are protected and have their basic needs met. Separately, concerns about a wider regional conflict are leading an American senator to issue a strong warning against Iran and the Lebanon-based militia Hezbollah. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has that story.
The Israel Defense Forces have underscored their determination to destroy Hamas in its entirety, following the militant group's deadly incursion into Israel on October 7. They also renewed calls for Palestinian civilians to evacuate the northern part of Gaza before strikes by Israel intensify. The IDF's spokesperson, Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, was interviewed on ABC.
We are seeing that people are actually evacuating. Indeed, we would like to see the humanitarian organizations assisting in the evacuation of people for the welfare of people and not side with Hamas, telling them not to evacuate.
With more than 1 million Palestinian civilians potentially trying to move out of harm's way, the United States is working with its partners to ensure the humanitarian needs of the displaced are being met, said White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on ABC's This Week.
We are in touch with our Israeli counterparts. We're in touch with the United Nations to help secure the necessary supplies of food, water, and medicine to the citizens of Gaza, those Palestinians who have nothing to do with the barbaric terrorists who carried out this attack.
The exchange of fire continued over the weekend at the Israeli border with Lebanon, where the Iran-backed militia Hezbollah operates. Republican Lindsey Graham, who plans to visit the region in the coming days with a bipartisan group of U.S. senators, issued a strong warning against Tehran and its allies, intending to play a more active role in the conflict.
If Hezbollah, which is a proxy of Iran, launches a massive attack on Israel, I would consider that a threat to the state of Israel, existential in nature. I will introduce a resolution in the United States Senate to allow military action by the United States in conjunction with Israel to knock Iran out of the oil business. Iran, if you escalate this war, we're coming for you.
Meanwhile, as part of a regional tour aimed at diffusing tensions, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met Sunday with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. They both agreed on the importance of ensuring assistance to the Palestinian civilians fleeing the war, according to spokesperson Matthew Miller. Blinken is expected to travel again to Israel on Monday for further consultations. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
A little more on the diplomacy angle. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken continued his diplomatic push across seven nations in the Middle East, trying to stop the conflict from spreading, and he reached out to his Chinese counterpart. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
1 week after the brutal attacks by Hamas militants on Israel, Israeli forces massed along the border with Gaza, after warning residents of Gaza City to leave so that they can destroy Hamas operating capacity. The United Nations and other international organizations warned that water is running out in Gaza and that asking some 1 million people to evacuate from northern Gaza in the middle of a war zone is dangerous and in some cases impossible. Amid the tensions, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken visited the United Arab Emirates as part of a 7-country tour to try to stop the violence from spreading. Blinken toured Abu Dhabi's Abrahamic Family House, an interfaith complex that opened in February, housing a mosque, a church, and a synagogue. Blinken signed a tile on the wall with the words, "Light in the Darkness." Earlier in the day, Blinken held talks with his Saudi counterpart in Riyadh. He again stressed that there can be no more business as usual with Hamas after the atrocities committed against Israeli civilians.
Hamas is not representative of the Palestinian people or their legitimate aspirations for the future. Hamas is a terrorist group. Its only agenda is to destroy the state of Israel and to murder Jews. And it's important that the entire world see it as such.
The Saudi foreign minister said it is important to condemn the targeting of civilians in any form, at any time, by anyone. Prince Faisal bin Farhan, Saudi foreign minister.
We need to work together to find a way out of this cycle of violence. This is something that we really, really need to focus on. Without a concerted effort to end this constant return to violence, it will always be the civilians that suffer first. It will always be civilians on both sides that end up paying the price.
Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, called on Israel Saturday to stop its attacks on Gaza, warning that the war might expand to other parts of the Middle East if Hezbollah joins the battle, and what would make Israel suffer what he called a huge earthquake. The State Department said Blinken also reached out to his Chinese counterpart, Wang Yi, on Saturday and had a 1-hour phone conversation, emphasizing that it is in everyone's interest to do everything possible to keep the conflict from spilling over into other countries. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. Poland's incumbent Law and Justice Party was narrowly ahead in Sunday's general election, exit polls showed, but the liberal opposition appears to have secured a majority, raising the possibility of an end to 8 years of nationalist rule. If the outcome is confirmed by official results, the vote would mark a massive turnaround for Warsaw. The search continued on Sunday for the 167 people still missing after a boat capsized on the Congo River in the northwestern Democratic Republic of Congo on Friday. At least 30 people are known to have drowned. And Taylor Swift is setting records again. Her Eras Tour movie has earned over $95 million in its opening weekend, making it the largest grossing concert film of all time, and it's only been in the theater since Thursday.
Oh, look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me. Oh, look what you made me do. Look what you made me do.
Missiles continue to fall on southern Israel as Israeli troops gather at the border for an anticipated incursion into Gaza. VOA's Celia Mendoza is there.
I am Celia Mendoza reporting from Esderad, Israel, on the border with Gaza, where today I am witnessing the Iron Dome in action after missiles fired from Gaza to Israel were intercepted by the sophisticated system. Hamas has maintained the capability to launch these strikes even after the constant shelling by the Israel Defense Forces. The Israeli government has cut off access to Gaza of electricity, water, food, and gas, leaving the civilians in a dire situation, according to the United Nations. The UN is warning against the strategy implemented in Gaza by Israel. As I left Esderad, the sound of explosions continued and thousands of troops are gathering along the border with Gaza in an area that has been evacuated. I am Celia Mendoza from Esderad, Israel, for Voice of America.
In Celia's report, we heard about the Iron Dome defense system in Israel, but what is it and how does it work? VOA's Rick Pantaleo spoke with missile defense expert Professor Dinshaw Mistry from the University of Cincinnati.
So the Iron Dome is one layer of a multi-layer missile defense system, and it is the layer designed for the shortest range incoming rockets a range of about 2 to 40 miles. And then there are other layers of missile defense, such as the David Sling and the Arrow, that defend against rockets coming in from greater ranges. So that's the short definition of the system.
And what does it do? I understand that it has intercepted 90% of projectiles fired toward Israel since it was attacked by surprise by Hamas.
That is right. It has a fairly good interception rate of 90%, and it's been used since about 2012. So Hamas fired rockets in 2012, 2014, 2018, 2021. And in each of those incidents, the Iron Dome intercepted over 90%.
Who developed and constructed it?
So it was originally developed by an Israeli company, the Rafael Air Defense System. And over the past few years, it's also been co-produced by Raytheon in Arizona.
Why and how does the United States fund the Iron Dome?
Well, the U.S. funds Iron Dome as part of a defense aid to Israel. And since 2012, we've given approximately $3 billion for the Iron Dome system.
And has there been much debate regarding the U.S. support of it in Congress?
Yeah, so Congress is fully supportive of the system, and in part because it is very effective in addressing the threat of incoming rockets.
And if it's such a wonderful missile deterrent, why doesn't Ukraine have access to its use with its war with Russia?
So this is a good question. Ukraine has requested it. Israel has held back on supplying this to Ukraine in part for political considerations, its relationship with Russia, but also because it does not want Russia to get a hold of that technology in case Russia captures it in any military operations in Ukraine.
Since the U.S. plays a role in its development and construction, does the U.S. have access to this technology?
Yes, the U.S. does have access. It does co-produce this. Raytheon co-produces it. And the U.S. Army has also purchased a few batteries of this missile defense system.
And finally, Professor, what is this new Iron Beam system that's supposed to work in tandem with the Iron Dome?
So the new Iron Beam is currently undergoing research and development. It should be operational within a year, and it is designed to intercept rockets at even shorter ranges than the Iron Dome. So, in fact, it would complement the Iron Dome.
Thank you very much for taking my questions today, Professor Dinshaw Mistry, a professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Cincinnati in Ohio.
Thank you, Rick.
From Washington, it's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. Still to come on the program, a look at the dysfunction inside the U.S. House of Representatives and an answer in Saturday's referendum in Australia to include native peoples in the country's constitution. But before any of that, there's been another powerful earthquake in Afghanistan. This latest disaster follows a pair of strong earthquakes and aftershocks that recently killed thousands of people. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Afghans are once again bringing their injured to hospitals as the country suffers its third magnitude 6.3 earthquake in just over a week. The U.S. Geological Survey says the quake's epicenter was about 34 kilometers outside the provincial capital, Herat. Authorities report a handful of people dead and at least 150 injured, according to the head of the emergency relief team, who cautioned those numbers may rise as rescuers reach more affected areas. Some in Herat had already been sleeping in tents following last week's earthquakes that killed thousands and leveled buildings. They say they don't feel safe returning home. Herat resident Bharat Ali speaking with Reuters.
We have been staying on the road for the last 5 or 6 days since the first quake struck because our homes are not strong enough. So we came out living here for fear of more quakes.
The United Nations says aid deliveries have been underway as of midweek, but they fall far short of Afghanistan's needs. Head of Communications for the UN's World Food Program, Philippe Kropf.
This is a disaster on top of a disaster on top of a disaster on top of a disaster. Currently, we have 15 million people who do not know where their next meal will come from. And the World Food Program is only able to support 3 million people due to a massive funding shortfall. So we're really calling on the international community to support the Afghan people, stand in solidarity, and also support the World Food Program.
Despite budget shortfalls, the UN says it may consider cash distributions in the coming weeks. Afghanistan's healthcare system widely relies on foreign aid, which has been drying up since the Taliban took control more than 2 years ago. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives have nominated conservative Jim Jordan from Ohio on Friday in a chaotic third day of attempting to elect a Speaker of the House. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, Jordan needs substantially more support to win a full floor vote, expected for this Tuesday, to become the person who will be second in the presidential line of succession.
The U.S. House of Representatives at a standstill, unable to pass any legislation sending aid to Israel or Ukraine until lawmakers hold a full floor vote next week to decide if conservative Republican Jim Jordan will become Speaker.
I think I can unite the Congress. I think I can go tell the country what we're doing and why it matters to them.
Jordan won the Republican conference vote 124-81 in a secret ballot. He now has several days to build support to get to the 217 votes he needs to be elected. George Washington University's Casey Burgat.
The problem is that what satisfies one doesn't satisfy the other. And in that instance, you end up making a lot of different promises to other people, which can upset some of the other folks in the party. And so this is why it's always been a very fine line to walk for a potential speaker, and why we've already seen one kicked out of his office already.
Jordan, a nine-term congressman known for his investigations into the Biden administration, earned the endorsement of Kevin McCarthy, who was removed from power as Speaker of the House in a historic vote last week.
And I think Jim Jordan could do an excellent job.
Democratic Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries is expected to win the support of all 212 Democrats when the decision goes to a full House floor vote.
House Republicans have just elected a speaker nominee who in 16 years in this Congress hasn't passed a single bill because his focus has not been on the American people. His focus has been on peddling lies and conspiracy theories and driving division amongst the American people.
Some Democrats have suggested a power-sharing agreement to reach the 217 needed for election. Republicans are also exploring giving temporary Speaker of the House, Patrick McHenry, more permanent powers to pass legislation for a period of several weeks. Casey Burgat.
With 218 votes, with a majority in the House, you can do almost anything, including change the rules, create new precedents. So if they did want to empower him, the Speaker Pro Tem McHenry or otherwise, into basically a speaker-in-waiting kind of position, they could do that.
The House is expected to return to Washington for the full floor vote Monday. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
And finally today, following up on a story we first brought you last week. On Saturday, Australia decisively rejected a proposal to recognize Indigenous people in the Constitution. It's seen as a major setback to the country's efforts for reconciliation with its First Peoples. Reuters' Ilan Rubens has the story.
Australians had to vote yes or no in the referendum on the question of whether to alter the Constitution to recognise Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island people through the creation of an Indigenous advisory body, the Voice to Parliament. Australia's Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese.
At the outset, I want to say that while tonight's result is not one that I had hoped for, I absolutely respect the decision of the Australian people and the democratic process that has delivered it.
Australian media projected that at least four states would vote against altering the 122-year-old constitution, including New South Wales, Tasmania, Queensland, and South Australia. A successful referendum requires at least four of the six states to vote in favour, along with national majority. Because of Australia's time zones, voting in Western Australia was still underway as it became clear the referendum was lost. Emotions ran high in the Yes campaign camp. Auntie Shirley Lomas is an Indigenous leader.
I imagine today most of the visceral voters would have voted no, and that's because of an ingrained and deep-seated fear, and they wouldn't use their intellect to vote yes.
Australia's Indigenous citizens, who make up 3.8% of the country's 26 million population, have inhabited the land for about 60,000 years, but are not mentioned in the Constitution. They are, by most socio-economic measures, the most disadvantaged people in the country. Many Indigenous people favoured the change, but some said it was a distraction from achieving practical and positive outcomes. The political opposition has criticised the measure, saying it is divisive, would be ineffective, and would slow government decision-making.
That's Reuters' Alon Rubens reporting. And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The relationship with China is arguably the most consequential and the most complex of any that we have, said U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken during a conversation at Rice University in Houston, Texas. China, said Secretary Blinken, has the military, economic, and diplomatic means to pose a challenge to the current understanding of the rules of the road.
We don't shy away from the notion that we're in an intense competition. And as Americans, there's nothing wrong, and in fact, in many ways, everything right with competition. As long as it's fair, and as long as we are properly resourced to succeed in that competition.
There are two foundations the Biden administration has put in place to deal with the challenges posed by China, Secretary Blinken said.
It starts at home, because our strength at home goes directly to our ability to have a strong standing around the world and to deal with competition from other states. The investments that we've been able to make over the past 2.5 years, truly historic in nature, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, the CHIPS and Science Bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, which goes to 21st century climate technology and energy technology. This is a demonstration that America is determined to compete and America is determined to lead.
The second foundation is to work with other countries to build what Secretary Blinken calls convergence.
There's tremendous power in that convergence of approaches because just take economic issues where we have differences with China. If it's only the United States that is opposing something that China's doing, well, that's significant, but we're 20% of world GDP. If we're aligned with European partners, with key partners in Asia, Japan, Korea, Australia, India, suddenly we're 50 or 60% of world GDP. And that is a weight that no country, including China, can ignore.
There are also areas where the United States is directly contesting China's activities, and Secretary Blinken said, we will do whatever we have to do. However, he stressed, the United States and China do have overlapping interests where there is opportunity for cooperation, including climate change, global health, and non-proliferation. I don't think these things are in contradiction, said Secretary Blinken, but the common denominator is approaching each of them from a position of strength.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.